The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good morning. Welcome to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. Barbara is here to keep you educated on elder care issues. She will give you the information you need to help your aging loved one and yourself. Now here is your host, Barbara Friesner.
Good morning and welcome to AgeWise Living. And thank you so much for joining us today on this gorgeous fall day. I hope that's the way it is for you because it's a gorgeous day here in the Northeast. And do you believe that in 2 days it's October 1st? I can't believe that we're in October already. And I'm just loving this weather, so I'm very happy. I'm your host, Barbara Friesner, and my company is AgeWise Living, and I am a generational coach. And I became a generational coach as the result of my own personal experience as a care manager, first for my grandmother, and I did that for many years, and then overlapping with her, and for the past 17 years, for my mother, who had severe advanced dementia. So all total, I was a care manager for more than 25 years. And because of my own personal experience, I really know how difficult elder care can be and how confusing it can be. You know, there was a time when I first started doing my work, certainly when I first started helping my mother and my grandmother, but even when I started as a generational coach, you just couldn't find the information. It just wasn't out there. And now if you Google elder care, millions and millions of answers come up, or not answers, but websites come up. And the difficulty is knowing, okay, so now I've got too much information. How do I sort through it? So that's what I help my clients do. I work as a generational coach, and I work only with the family members, never the senior, but I help the family members figure out what is the right solution for their loved one, and then I help them communicate effectively with their loved one so they'll actually do what is in their best interest, which is usually the hard part. The other hard part, oftentimes even harder than working with the seniors themselves, is working with siblings. So I also help families work together so that they can really resolve some really difficult and emotional and critical elder care issues. And all the work I do is by phone, so I'm working with people all over the country, family members all over the country, so we can get everybody working together and really supporting each other so that they can support their aging loved one. And I am also an adjunct professor at Cornell University, where I teach senior housing management. I write a free weekly newsletter with lots of great articles about all kinds of issues that are affecting seniors and their families. And by the way, if you have not yet signed up for my free weekly newsletter, I really urge you to do so because, as I said, it's free, it's weekly, and the articles, in my opinion, are really good. I write most of them, and then I also have guest writers. But if you're interested, go to agewiseliving.com, and when you sign up for my free newsletter, not only will you get lots of great and very useful articles and tips and stuff like that, but you also get a complimentary copy of my legal and financial organizer. And that's something that's really important. It's going to help you to sort through all the papers and organize it in one particular place. So it's a really great thing to have. So again, that's agewiseliving.com. And I write a monthly column for the National Association of Baby Boomer Women and a monthly column for a new magazine called Caregiving in America. It's a monthly national magazine, so I'm really excited about that. And I am the creator of the Ultimate Caregiver Success System, which you can find all about on the shop page of my website. Again, that's agewiseliving.com. And because of my mother's dementia, when she died, she had very severe advanced dementia and had for many years. Dementia is a particular passion of mine, so I created a CD called Is It Simple Forgetfulness or the Real Thing? And you can find that on the shop page of my website, too, which is, again, agewiseliving.com. And to help people avoid problems before they happen, I also do speeches and workshops all over the country. And with the advent of October, it's very exciting because this month I am one of the speakers at the National Association, EAPA, the Employee Assistance Professionals Association World Conference. So I'm very excited about that, not only because it's an honor to be asked to speak, but also because it means that we're really, you know, national organizations, worldwide organizations are actually recognizing elder care as the issue that it is. And I have this show because it is my mission to help family members help their aging loved ones resolve their elder care issues by choice, not crisis. And what we're going to be talking about today is a problem that we hear, you know, often hear bizarre stories about, and presumably, well, actually, hopefully, these are just the most notorious stories, but it's a topic on a smaller scale that affects so many seniors and their families, and that is hoarding. And many elderly people may have had a lifetime of accumulating stuff that gradually got worse as they got older. And most of the time, their adult children are aware of the problem, but they don't know what to do about it. So today, we'll look at some of the reasons why the elderly hoard, and more importantly, what to do with it, to do about it, which is why I am so delighted to have with us today an expert on hoarding, Susan Sirota. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm delighted to be here.
And I am so delighted to have you here. Susan Sirota received her master's degree in social work from New York University. Currently, she is program director at Search and Care Incorporated, a community-based care management agency serving the needs of the elderly in Manhattan's Upper East Side and more recently East Harlem communities. Previously, Susan worked for the Jewish Association for Services for the Aged on the Lower East Side of Manhattan for 7 years, where she gained her first exposure to the hoarding situations. She then worked for 3 years as a home care social worker for Continuum Healthcare Partners, where she gained yet more exposure from a medical perspective to hoarding and the impact that it can have on health and safety. She is one of the founding members of the New York City Hoarding Task Force and has spoken on the subject of hoarding at various national and citywide conferences on aging. Additionally, her expertise is often sought by psychiatrists and other mental health professionals. She's on the executive board of ESCADA, which is the East Side Council on the Aging, and co-chair of the Manhattan Geriatric Mental Health Committee. She serves as adjunct faculty to NYU's Silver School of Social Work and maintains a small private practice and enjoys spending time with her collection of cats and horses. I hope not a hoard of cats and horses. But you can see from her resume why I am so delighted to have with us today Susan Sirota. So again, Susan, welcome.
Great. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And I have a question. This may be a silly question, but I have a question because my house, if I turn around in my office, there are piles of just piles, and I don't even know what's underneath them. And I'm pretty sure I'm not a hoarder, but how do you know the difference between bad clutter and hoarding? What's the difference?
Well, I would say that cluttered conditions in sort of an elderly or senior's home can result from a variety of causes, which include but are not limited to, let's say, physical frailty, disability, dementia, and it can sort of, you know, clutter is more like a minor hoarding type of situation. In my experience, clutter seems to be identified by what you're talking about, the lack of surface space, accumulations of piles of paper, magazines, clothes, etc. When we talk about hoarding, it involves much more mass or volume and can appear significantly more overwhelming. A great deal more is involved than just the surfaces. We're talking more like floor to ceiling. It's fairly overwhelming. Hoarding can be identified by collecting items that often don't seem to serve a purpose.
Is that like the old newspapers that people talk about, magazines?
And...
I watched a show the other day, a hoarding show, a show on hoarding, because
right.
at that well for this show, I watched that.
On
and the guy who collected his dog's hair.
Right. I actually saw that as well, which is, you know, with the emotional attachment to that as well. And it's very difficult for them to discard such things. Huge amounts of anxiety and stress go along with parting with these sorts of items.
And so is that part of, is that really the big key with when you're talking about hoarding? It's the emotion that goes with getting rid of it. I'd love to get rid of a lot of this stuff. It's just that I have to go through it first, and I never know what to do with it, and, you know. But I'd love to get rid of it.
Right. I think actually hoarding has a lot to do with the volume, and there is a, you know, and a real much more emotional investment in terms of the act of getting rid of it, and a great deal of anxiety and refusal and resistance. Clutter, it's hard to go through it, and hoarders experience on a greater scale that same thing. But as you know, the piles that get bigger and bigger, it becomes more and more overwhelming to take the time to really go through such, to go through those things.
Yeah, that's, I get rid of mine though, because I keep telling myself, you know, you look at stories like that and you think, oh my God, I cannot let that be me. So, now, what are some of the reasons that people hoard? You mentioned, you know, psychological. What are some of the reasons why people would hoard?
Okay. Well, there isn't any necessarily one specific answer or reason. I would say that the most widely held thought comes from sort of the cognitive or behavioral model of hoarding, which suggests that individuals who hoard have problems with such things as information processing, emotional attachments to possessions, which we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
strong beliefs about the nature of possessions, like the dog hair, which had symbolism or significance for the boy on the TV show,
mm-hmm.
motivational issues, and avoidance, behavioral avoidance. Individuals often experience fear of getting rid of something that might be important or necessary later on, something that they might feel is irretrievable, the fear of making a mistake, as hoarders are often, believe it or not, perfectionists. Another explanation might be the Depression-era mentality. Individuals who grew up in the Depression tend to be thrifty, frugal, and fearful of wasting anything that they might later need. Another physical infirmity is yet another reason it can play a role. For example, individuals who may live in walk-up buildings or who need to negotiate stairs and live alone find it difficult, maybe due to arthritis, deteriorating vision, or whatever, to get rid of things.
Yeah.
Things pile up, it becomes very messy there, and then there's a sense of shame, fear of being found out, all of which serve to isolate the person further. Depression also contributes to hoarding behavior, and the literature suggests this may be much more significant or a more significant cause, actually, than initially thought. And dementia, of course, also can play a role with a person not being able to distinguish between useful and non-useful things.
Yeah, and I know with dementia, and even if you don't have dementia, because I know I have been known to do this periodically, you put things where you're going to remember it the next time. I'll put things by the door if I want to remember to take them with me. But if I don't have to take them with me for a couple of days, they sort of become institutionalized, and I don't see them at the door anymore because they just are always there. So, you know, I mean, it's something that sort of snowballs a little bit. We're going to take a quick break because I really do want to talk some more about the depression aspect of it, because that's really interesting. I really hadn't thought of that. But anyway, we're going to take a short break. This is Barbara Friesner, and you're listening to Age-Wise Living, and our guest today is Susan Sirota. And when we come back, she's going to be answering more questions about hoarding and what to do about it. And if you want more information about Susan and her company, you can go to searchandcare.org, searchandcare.org. And I want to remind you again that if you haven't signed up for my free weekly newsletter, I really urge you to do so, and you can go to agewiseliving.com. And when you're there, you automatically get a complimentary copy of my legal and financial organizer. So with that, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com, to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and founder of Rock and Roll Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to the Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time here on News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Amanda, age 3. Tyler, age 8. Marissa, age 4.5.
We could tell you just how many child abductions last year led to Amber Alerts, but this isn't about cold statistics. It's about saving kids.
Shaniqua, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. When an alert is issued in your area, you'll receive it as a free text message. Wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, and welcome back to AgeWise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we're talking with Susan Sirotto, and she is an expert on the topic of hoarding and what to do about it. And before we go on the break, Susan, you'd mentioned just in passing, you mentioned about depression and how that has an effect on hoarding. And in what way does it?
Contribute,
yeah.
I would say with regard to depression, the inertia that accompanies it and the lack of energy and lack of energy motivation.
So it's just, you're just too tired, you curl up in your bed and don't...
Right, it's just you don't care, and there's apathy, and things pile up, and then it becomes more and more difficult to address them or deal with them, and fear of making the wrong mistake, and just all of that seems to contribute to hoarding behavior. And many people who do hoard do tend to have depression underlying a lot of, their behavior.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
There
it really is, because I can absolutely see how that happens. And of course, you become more depressed about the piles, and then the piles make you more depressed. And
exactly.
Now, another question: what are some of the indications that a person might have a problem with hoarding? When do you say to yourself, "This is a hoarding issue"?
Well, there are by no means any hard and fast rules, but certain telltale signs might be that an individual won't let you into their home, that they want to meet you elsewhere. When they come to your office, they might not be able to locate important papers. You might see someone, they might appear in the same outfit for days at a time or appear increasingly unkempt. In the city, here in New York, frequently we see individuals who tote lots of shopping bags or tend to use a shopping cart filled to the brim.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of working with seniors, we often have people who come to senior centers or to organizations like ours presenting with housing problems, landlord, neighbor problems, something usually not related to the hoarding. And those are sometimes indications, all those sort of taken together or piecemeal, a person might have a problem with hoarding.
Interesting. And I can imagine where they might not certainly want people in the apartment.
Correct.
Is it possible that someone doesn't know that they're hoarding?
I would say just that a person who wouldn't know they're hoarding would probably be somebody who lacks capacity or might have some form of dementia. Most people who hoard know that they, you know, are doing something that could be problematic and tend to be aware of it.
So they just don't know what to do about it, or just emotionally are not prepared to do something about it, I guess.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Unless they really are not cognizantly, you know, intact enough to know what's happening.
Yeah. Are there questions that are helpful to ask to figure out if a person has a problem with hoarding? What kind of questions do you ask that person about the hoarding,
right,
or do you ask family members?
Well, usually if we're dealing first sort of with the individual, because they're the person we would probably first attempt to engage, it's important to convey, at least initially, interest and a non-judgmental attitude. Asking questions like, are you uncomfortable having people? I mean, we're assuming that they are sort of identifying or giving you hints that they may have a hoarding situation. Are you uncomfortable having people come over because of the clutter in your home? Can you use your kitchen and or bathroom appliances? Do you have to move things off the furniture to sit or sleep? Sometimes these sorts of questions initially might be helpful to determine if they have a problem. And if you're picking up on the things, for example, they don't want you to come over, they don't want you to visit, they're not a good housekeeper, things of that sort.
Hmm.
So you can sort of ask more probing questions about that.
And this would be on the phone?
This would usually be on the phone.
To begin with.
Right, unless they arrange to meet you somewhere neutral.
So then you might ask to meet them outside of the house.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's sometimes a way to engage the individual if they're not going to let you in, that you sort of deal where they are at that time.
Hmm.
In a neutral place.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now, what really amazes me is when, again, I was watching this hoarding show on Lifetime or whatever it is, but I was watching this hoarding show in preparation for this, and one of the people actually had a husband, and she hoarded so much, they actually bought a second house to put all the stuff
right
in, and to put more stuff in, and now they were going to lose a house and blah, blah, blah. But she actually lived with someone. Is that, what if there are others in the home? I mean, how does this happen when there is someone else?
I haven't personally dealt with, you know, younger couples who are sort of that ambulatory as the ones on TV, but it's usually not uncommon to encounter other family members in these situations. Sometimes the person who hoards is the older person, and sometimes the person doing the hoarding might be sort of an older child, often with special needs like mental illness, developmental disorder, and of course there are also the individuals who seem to be perfectly fine. But there's certainly the element of risk certainly increases as there are others in the home. I've been in situations where the older person, or the older, usually dependent, is actually a child. The child's hoarding behavior puts the older person in harm's way. For example, increases risk of falls, prevents nurses or home care people from coming into the home, and actually causes the threat of eviction. If it's the older person who hoards, he or she can potentially endanger the spouse or the sibling, if you have somebody, a sibling living with you, or in the case of adults with younger children, which was also on TV, the hoarding behavior can interfere with the children's daily functioning, and then questions obviously come up around whether you need to engage Child Protective Services or some such agency.
Yeah, and I would imagine that a lot of times in seniors, because that's, you know, I mean, yes, those other cases, and yes, that
right,
two houses, it was a, you know, a younger couple, which just blew my mind. But anyway, with seniors, one of them may just be too tired to argue or, you know, do something that might be just too overwhelming for them. They aren't successful, so they just sort of tune it out, or there may be dementia, or how do you help that other person?
Well,
helping the hoarder, so you help the other person as well?
Right. You can try to, I mean, in these situations. Because usually, I mean, dealing with any sort of family members, if you don't help one, then they're not going to allow you to help the other. you sort of need to engage both of them together usually.
Oh, okay. So you, even if you're meeting with that one individual, the hoarder, mm-hmm. you also want them to have their spouse with them too?
Yeah, usually these are sort of situations that impact everybody in the household. It's not just one person, because each behavior is going to impact the other. So I would say that everybody is sort of engaged usually.
Okay.
Because as you saw, even on the TV show, I think the person who, the wife was certainly, you know, disturbing her husband, and he needed to sort of be a part of it. And I'm sure he has feelings, too, in terms of even contributing to letting her have a second house, et cetera. There's sort of all sorts of interdependencies.
Wow, yeah. Now, that's talking about another person. What about with pets? Do you find that people hoard pets? Do we call it hoarding pets?
Yeah, it's called animal hoarding. Pets are sort of a special category. They can be considered the same as others or family, children or spouses, with the hoarding also exerting a really negative impact on them as well. For example, pets are living in squalor. They can't access their litter boxes or resting places or clean feeding areas. And I would say this applies maybe to one, two, or three. There's animal hoarding, which is a subdivision, that's sort of a regular hoarding. Tufts University has done really extensive work on animal hoarding.
Mm-hmm.
They have a great website. It is www.tufts.edu/vet/CFA/hoarding. The dynamics of animal hoarding are very similar to those of regular hoarding, the same attachment issues, obsessive feelings. Animal hoarders may start out with really good intentions, but their irrational behaviors often cause significant suffering to the large number of animals in their care.
Is this like with when you have stray animals and
mm-hmm.
then the strays have, you know, you start feeding them and then the strays start having babies and then more come and
I think
we kind of lose?
The telltale signs, though, animal hoarders really don't even know how many pets they have, and the sight of the animals. I mean, if you have, like, I've seen clips where there are people who have, like, 8 cats, but they're all very well maintained, and that person is questionable if they're considered an animal hoarder. Animal hoarders are usually, the pets appear really thin, sick, roomy-eyed, neglected, and just basically unwell.
Okay. And that's really sad. And by the way, that's a long website, so what I'd love you to do is to send me that website
sure.
address, and I'll put it in my newsletter.
Okay.
Because I think that's really important thing, because obviously it's horrible and sad, and you know, it breaks your heart to help the person.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, the same is true about the pets, who really are often just, you know, unwilling victims in all of this.
Similar
as well.
To children.
So we definitely all have that website in my newsletter. Now we're talking about letting the house go and letting, you know, the pet's health go and that sort of thing. Is this something where they're letting themselves go too? I mean, is this like self-neglect or something?
Yeah, very frequently. Hoarding and self-neglect are often found together. And I certainly can provide more websites which perhaps would give more information on that topic as well. Certainly the Collier brothers are notorious in terms of, you know, in addition to being hoarders, they also neglected themselves and their health as well.
Yeah, the Collier brothers, they were in New York like 100 years ago, and they
right.
were pretty much the original ones, because they were in this mansion. They were wealthy in a mansion, and
right, and there's a book out now, I think, sort of.
Yeah, that just came out.
Exactly. One website that would be helpful, and I can provide you with the others as well for your newsletter, but one useful one is called Hoard House, and the website would be http://hoardhouse, all one word, .com.
H-O-A-R-D-H-O-U-S-E.
H-O-U-S-E, correct.
Okay. Tell you what, with that, and we'll repeat it as soon as we come back, but with that, we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to, as I say, stop for a short break. This is Barbara Friesner,
and you're listening to Age-Wise Living. And our guest today is Susan Sirota, and she is giving us really fascinating information about hoarding and what to do about it. So just such important information. And with that, we will take a break, and we'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
If you want to put the pep back in your step, Chad Lafferty says just what you're looking for. Dance is life. Life is dance.
It's only about dance.
It's about moving through life with style, gaining awareness of the never-ending, ever-flowing movement that accompanies all of life's activities. Dance is life. Life is dance. Broadcast every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Radio Network. Be sure to tune in and tap into the limitless healing that dance can provide.
Can't stop now.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Age-Wise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free, 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, welcome back to Age-Wise Living. I'm Barbara Friesner, and today we are talking with Susan Sirota about hoarding, and which is a fascinating topic because I think there really is sort of a point at which something becomes, you know, that sort of that tipping point where it goes from clutter to hoarding, and then you get so depressed about it. And I honestly can relate to that, where I look at my office, and especially when I'm preparing two or three big projects, and so I have a pile over here that's one and a pile over here that's another, and they sort of get away from them, and so you just want to, you know, close the door and walk away, which I have to admit I've done a couple of times, but never mind. But, you know, you sort of get to that point. Before we run on break, Susan, I don't want to forget to do this. You mentioned, I know there are a number of websites that you said you had a number of websites, but one that you wanted to end, those will all be in my newsletter, in next week's newsletter. But the one that you gave just before we left, that was Hoard House, H-O-A-R-D?
H-O-U-S-E.com.
Hoardhouse.com.
Right. And it's a relatively new one, and it's pretty comprehensive.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. And people can get what there?
All different perspectives from everybody's sort of perspective. It's got good visuals. It was the work of a Columbia student, Ben Piven, and two other people. And it gives you information on, as well as visuals and stories of people, sort of interviews, but it gives you sort of the psychological background, and it gives you the housing perspective and legal perspective, and, you know, different, all sorts of perspectives, as well as pretty good photography.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great, because it is such a complex issue. I really, the way I've found Susan is because I heard her speak at ESCADA, the Eastside Council on the Aging, and I just had no idea that it was such a complex issue. So it's wonderful to have websites, and what an incredible thing with the internet that you can, you know, really look at and get the stories and all the different perspectives. So now, what is you sure have touched on this a little bit before, but what is the best way to engage someone who hoards? Because I would think that with all the things that we've been talking about, they would just not want to talk to anybody.
Right. It's a good idea, again, to convey interest, to be really open and have a non-judgmental attitude. Express concern if it's appropriate. For example, if you're asking them and you're in their apartment, instead of, you know, looking at it sort of a guest, you might ask them how they view their situation. What can they see themselves accepting in the way of help? Curiosity is certainly, you know, being curious about them and their space. How do they plan to use, if there is any available space? What are their hopes for their stuff? It is generally not helpful to come across as being overly professional, rigid, or controlling, as this won't get you very far. And I've heard stories of people just sort of being thrown out as a result. Being flexible and patient is great, not referring to getting rid of things or disposing of things. It's better to think in terms of reorganization of the place. The term reorganization might be more acceptable than discarding or disposing or throwing out.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because you mentioned about their plans for the stuff, and in some cases I would guess that there are people who think, and rightfully so, in fact, that they might have a collection or number of collections of things that might, in fact, be of value to someone else, or to a museum or to a library or to a school. And do you find that? I mean, I'm sure that's the exception, but do you find that?
Yeah, no, I think that's happened. I think in some situations where there are professional people going in the sense of, you know, people who specialize in cleaning, estate clearance, things like that, that they have found collections that are valuable, and part of the work would be unearthing the stuff, gathering it together, and then maybe having it appraised.
Yeah.
If the person's amenable to that.
Yeah, so
but
because
it's not
I think
unusual to find money scattered throughout and all kinds of things of great value.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister and I went through all my mother's stuff, and we were kind of hoping we would find, you know, the $1,500 million that you hear stuffed in nothing. No, I mean, my parents were incredibly well organized. They just had a lot of stuff. But really, as far as engaging people who hoard, I think really the important thing is to, as you say, to not go in and talk about getting rid of, because it implies that their stuff has no value.
Correct.
And it does to them to some extent. Whatever the value is, it has some value to them.
Sure.
Now, what if they refuse to let any apartment? I mean, what do you do if that's?
Well, that's usually fairly common that they refuse the cleaning of their apartment or home. I guess the first thing is important. To determine their level of capacity or awareness of their situation. I mean, do they have the ability to make an informed decision, and are they aware of the consequences or ramifications, you know, of their actions? Are they aware there might be legal repercussions? It's also helpful to take inventory of their support network. We haven't talked much about the other people in their lives, but who's available to help? Family, friends. Unfortunately, sometimes the cleaning up only comes after a mandate or legal action like an eviction that comes from the outside. What one can do until that time is sort of to explore the options available to the person who hoards, maybe think about alternatives, and again review the need for adherence to sort of what would be considered minimum safety guidelines.
And you talk about a support network, and I want to stop you and go back
sure.
to that for a second, because I think a lot of times things really get out of hand because people aren't really communicating with each other, like a care provider, an in-home care provider, or somebody who delivers meals on wheels, or, you know, even the guy who delivers the mail or whatever, who is aware of something, but people are not, especially with long-distance families or people, families who are far away, there's just not the communication and the connecting of the dots, and how important that really is, that someone is really sort of, you know, if anything's going on with mom, please give me a call, here's my phone number, you know, really kind of, so that you see it before the tipping point.
Right.
Because getting evicted is the worst-case scenario. I mean, you want to stop this before that
definitely
happens.
Definitely, if you can. Unfortunately, sometimes it can't be done. But family, too, I guess it's important to mention. Family is not only the conventional family. People can have other support networks of friends or neighbors or, you know, people who are not blood family who can help as well. And it could be the whole constellation of people in that person's life if they have people in their life.
Yeah.
For people who don't, they're pretty isolated.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't, but there's also, you know, again, the idea of people from their social circle, whether it's through church or synagogue, whether
exactly.
it's through the senior center or whatever, people who used to go to see her or him and who don't get to go in the house anymore.
Right.
Letting somebody know before it gets that serious.
A crisis. And sometimes, unfortunately, the crisis makes it possible to do anything.
Yeah.
It's nice to avoid that, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's my motto, which is elder care issues resolved by choice, not crisis.
Right.
And the problem is, and that's why I work with family members on things like this, is to how do you present it. So if they refuse to allow cleaning of their home or their apartment,
mm-hmm.
what do you do?
You attempt to sort of engage them and work with them. It's sort of tricky. I mean, you try to focus sometimes if you can't get any further on minimum safety guidelines, that what's acceptable to, let's say, the neighbors or to the landlord, to prevent the eviction. And they will sort of give you, you know, a stipulation or things, you know, and that if you're at least going along with what minimum safety guidelines in the home, then they probably, if you at least can meet those, that's a helpful thing.
Yeah, if you get the number of pets down to under X amount.
Right. Have a working toilet and sink, no excess accumulations of garbage or vermin, no blocked egresses, access to fire escapes and windows, walkways and rooms that are used on a regular basis, also absence of fire hazards. You shouldn't have combustibles near radiators or the stove, or overloading of electrical outlets. You know, that's usually, certainly that works for apartments regarding houses or private dwellings. The problems with hoarding don't always become a matter for public awareness until it impacts neighbors. For example, garbage-strewn yards, excess pets, rodents, or again, like someone, a visiting nurse, a delivery person, or family member has the occasion to visit and glimpse the conditions inside. And then they can take action. I know that each jurisdiction or state or city has its own sets of rules and regulations pertaining to minimum safety guidelines, but some of the ones I just mentioned are probably the ones that are pretty universal.
And where locally, because obviously we're in New York and people are listening all over the world, but it's certainly all over the country, is there a local, is it the Department of Health that you would, website that you'd be able to get this information?
I could probably get that. I mean, I would say usually each fire, you know, fire departments are pretty familiar with what's acceptable in terms
okay.
of safety. And then I think throughout the, sort of certainly through the states, there are what they consider triple A's, social service organizations, adult protective services, and all of them are fairly well-versed in terms of what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah, I would imagine starting with the Department of the Aging or Adult Protective Sheriff's, something like that. We're going to stop again for a short break. This is Barbara Friesner. It's AgeWise Living. And our guest today is Susan Scirotto. And when we come back shortly, she's going to be answering more questions about hoarding and what to do about it. And to get more information about Susan and her company, you can go to searchandcare.org. And by the way, Susan's going to be sending me a lot of websites and a lot of information, and I'm actually going to have her write the article for next week's newsletter with lots more information that I'm sure we're not going to get to. So I would love to have you sign up for my newsletter at agewiseliving.com, and when you do, you'll also get a complimentary copy of my legal and financial organizer. So with that, we're going to take a break.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you struggling with caregiving responsibilities for your parents, in-laws, or other aging loved ones? Are you in an elder care power struggle with your siblings? Are you struggling to balance work and elder care and feeling you're losing control of both? Are elder care issues such as driving, finances, or maintaining their home costing you time, money, relationships, and peace of mind? Wanting to help an aging loved one is one of the most loving and compassionate things you can do. However, your help may not always be appreciated or well received, leaving you tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed. If this sounds like what you're going through, you're not alone. I'm Barbara Friesner, and I'm a generational coach, and I'm here to help you. To get started, just call me toll-free for a complimentary Get Acquainted conversation at 877-AGE-WISE. That's 877-AGE-WISE. Or go to my website, agewiseliving.com. That's agewiseliving.com, to resolve your elder care issues by choice, not crisis. Call 877-AGE-WISE.
How many of us haven't felt ripped off at one time or another? Don't you wish you had some place to tune in for the answers? Join Jennifer Litwin every week on The Shop Cop. She'll take the time to explain real value and keep you away from the fraud that's out there in the shopping world. Jennifer has become the shopper's advocate, which means she can get you on the right track. Her guests are a who's who in the retail world. Don't get caught making a mistake in this down economy. Jennifer Litwin is here to help. The Shop Cop, live Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to AgeWise Living with Barbara Friesner. If you have a question for Barbara, a comment or problem you wish to discuss on today's program, call in now at 1-866-472-5788. That's toll-free 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Barbara at agewiseliving.com. Now back to our program.
Hi, welcome back to AgeWise Living, and I'm Barbara Friesner, and our guest today is Susan Scirotto, and she's talking about hoarding and what to do about it, and it's a fascinating subject. I really had no idea that it was quite as complex as it was. I just thought it was, you know, piles that kind of got out of hand, and to some extent they are, I guess, but when we went on to break, you were talking about the minimum safety guidelines, and in order for someone to continue to live in their home or in their apartment. So if they're over that, what do you do, if they do allow cleaning, what's the best way to go about that? I mean, how if they agree to it, mm-hmm. where do you start?
Okay. Well, it's important, obviously, they need to be involved from the very beginning. They need to sort of be engaged. They need to know what's going on. They have to, obviously, they've consented, but confer with them. Let them have some degree of control over the cleanup if it's feasible. They need to be present and to determine who else they feel would be it would be helpful to have with them.
Let me interrupt for a quick second. You said they have to be present, and somebody at one point had said, well, I don't see why they don't just, you know, take them to the store and while they're gone just clean out the house. Why not?
It ends up being extremely traumatic for the individual, and you don't make any headway. It just, you know, they're resentful, they're angry, they're usually stealing allegations. They, if it's a family member that does it, there are bad feelings probably for the rest of time. It may work immediately. You get the place cleaned out, but the ramifications are pretty far-reaching, and it usually, you know, they don't trust. It's just generally not a great idea. It's
okay.
A huge violation since the hoarded stuff is sort of an inner sanctum.
Okay.
So it's also helpful to try to do as much. I mean, sometimes it's inevitable that they have to be taken out, but hopefully not. Try to do as much organizing and sorting beforehand, as this tends to save both time and money. If a client isn't...
Like what? Organizing ahead of time, like what? Like coming in and figuring out what's going to go to the thrift shop, what's going to go to the library, that kind of organizing?
Right, and trying to get rid of the things that they're willing to remove or put important safeguarding valuables. If there's valuable jewelry or things and they know where they are, they should put them somewhere else before people come in to do cleaning if possible.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing is helpful. If there's cash lying around, safeguard that.
I would imagine even if it's like important papers,
exactly.
Even if they're just important to them, which makes them important, that, you know, letters or whatever, that those should be taken and put someplace special. Put them in the trunk of the car for now and make sure that they don't get missing.
Right. In terms of, it's also important to determine whether the presence of family or friends is going to be helpful or is it going to deter the process. I mean, sometimes their presence may feel a family, you know, too intimate or personal. It might be better to have an impartial crew along with a professional organizer.
Because a family member might have been critical in the past?
Exactly, or just might say, come on, just get rid of it, and push too much.
Okay.
Or not be sympathetic enough. And not understand what the person's experiencing and why this stuff is valuable to them. Again, every case is different, and so are the resources or assistance that the given state or place can provide, because certainly finances are a consideration as well, as heavy-duty cleanings tend to be quite expensive.
So is it better, quote-unquote, better to have it be family and friends, or is it which is very personal and might be more supportive, or is it quote-unquote better? And I know that it depends on if the answers you just gave, but
you know, the advantages,
is it better in some ways to hire a cleaning crew where it can be more impersonal, or does it just depend on the situation?
It depends, but I would say there are advantages to a cleaning crew, preferably with an overseer, because they're familiar with what's actually needed for cleaning, and they can access such things as dumpsters or containers. They can facilitate transportation, arrangements for storage if needed, supplies. All of these things become sort of essential for cleaning up a hoarding situation. There's enough resistance to a cleanup from the beginning, so any impediment or glitch that presents itself can be reason enough for the individual to, say, call the whole thing off. I mean, the fewer potential impediments or disruptions or reasons to stall, definitely the better. Family, it may not be aware of codes and when you can park a dumpster in front of a building or what the guidelines, all this stuff which nobody thinks about when you're doing a cleanup, all that stuff has to be sort of figured out in advance.
And I would imagine that also when we're talking about really, you know, heavy-duty clutter of hoarding, where there's you know, dirt and vermin and that sort of thing, you also have to take into consider health
right.
issues and a crew that specializes in removal of animals, or even the police getting involved, or the dog catcher. I don't know.
Right, or whichever, or hazmat suits, or things like that.
Yeah.
And bed bugs, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. So I would imagine that it's a matter of combining the two between the love and support of a family, assuming that there is love and support of family and friends, and a cleaning crew, one to support the loved one and the other to support the house.
Exactly. Definitely.
Wow.
That's the best. I mean, that's the best scenario.
Yeah, is that expensive?
Usually, I can't say, I think it varies, but certainly it's expensive because usually a cleaning crew, it's helpful to have an overseer and they charge, you know, professional organizers, I think, charge. You know, there's
whatever they charge, and then there's a crew that comes in as well.
Right, and dumpsters cost money usually and all these sorts of, you know, things. And it can go on, the slower you go, the more it costs on an hourly basis, so it can become quite expensive.
Yeah, but
I mean, there's state, you know, Adult Protective Services, which is probably pretty much, you know, statewide. They can do it, you know, they may not do it the way you want them to do it, but they will do it without, usually for free.
Oh, okay, so there are, if the senior doesn't have the money, and neither does the family, there are ways of doing
it. Right, it'd still be helpful to have the family present, because at least often in New York what happens is that Adult Protective Services may not spend, there's no oversight necessarily or you know, somebody really working with the person. Often it's just a crew that comes in and cleans. And
but I need to cut you off. I am so, so sorry, because that's all the time we have. The time went so fast, and this is so fascinating, and I really apologize for cutting you off because I'm fascinated, but I have to do that. I want to again thank my guest, Susan Sirota, Program Director at Search and Care. And remember, and if you have any questions, send them to me at barbara@agewiseliving.com. And Susan's going to put all of this information and more in my newsletter, so sign up for that at agewiseliving.com. Please join us next Tuesday morning. And until then, happy October 1st. Carpe diem. Seize the day.
We appreciate your joining us for AgeWise Living with host Barbara Friesner. Please tune in again next Tuesday morning at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, here on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.